Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network. Please join us in the chat room at wolfspiritmedia.net.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Tune in with TalkStream Live, search for Ever Beyond. Also, you can call to listen on 712-432-9588. Selected archives are also available on my YouTube channel, Studio 9 Jam. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, yes. Well, welcome and good afternoon, good evening. Let me just adjust my mic and make terrible sounds. There we go. Let's see if that works. Yes, there we are. Now pointing towards me instead of pointing somewhere towards the floor. Right, well, here we are. Yes. It's one of those weeks. It's been one of those weeks, like several weeks, weeks worth of weeks, kind of one of those weeks things. Well, I suppose you could say it's been one of those months. This month of October, moving into November, we've been kind of expecting something to turn up, things to happen. And at the beginning of November, things really started to happen. Those of you who have been following the internet and sort of watching the web pages and things have been observing what's been going on with, in, 4chan and, this character called Q Anon. Those who have been paying attention will be noticing that things that this character Q is saying is also having an effect on the world outside, because well, lots of things have been happening. So that's one of the things that's been going on this week. I have been personally very, very sick, kind of out of action and sleeping, and it's just kind of typical. It's been like you wait for the world, the big world party, and you have a headache the day that it happens, kind of thing. Oh, and yeah. I'm exhausted. I keep falling asleep. My day has all been upside down, back to front. Anyway, so if you would like to talk to me and keep me awake, God's sake, yeah, get me to talk about something interesting, and I'll be on the case. As most of the rest of the time, I've been just dozing around and making the odd little device. Playing with my USB crystals and things like that. But most of the time I've been asleep. So I don't know if I'm absolutely able to do a show tonight. Mainly because I'm just like not quite awake. I tried to get, you know, I got enough sleep this morning, but I've just been lolling every time I put somebody on the show, got a clip on your arm, I just go and lie down again. It's been like that for the last 5 hours. So I'm not sure if I'm really completely up to doing a show today. But if somebody actually talks to me, I might stay awake. So that's your challenge. Do come to the chat room at wellwellwell.wolfspiritradio.com. You can also go to wolfspiritmedia.net. Until somebody calls in. Well, no, I should be talking about something. What's been going on this week with this Q character? Okay, so first question is like, what's the deal? Those of you who have not been not been seeing what's going on, who have not been following this. Okay, let's start off. Number one, there is a place called 4chan. 4chan is like kind of like an enormous chat room. A bit like chat and go, how we, you know, we have a chat room here. It's incredibly anonymous. You can just post anything from wherever you are, and you don't even have to give your name or anything like that. And, it's a place where a lot of spooks hang out. You have to understand, you know, it's the sort of thing, that they would be very interested. It's a place where you'd go, where you'd be able to post stuff without, without being tracked back to, well, you're a member of a government organization, or you work at the White House, or 2100 Pennsylvania Avenue, you know, whatever the name of, wherever you are, you can post it. And there's, you know, there's, it's got a community there already. But, this week there's been this character, or this month there's been this character called Q. Oh, I can't believe it. I'm yawning my head off. Hang on. I'm going to put some music on and go and stand outside for a couple of minutes, get some fresh air into my Brian, and see if we can, if I can actually, speak to some sense in my brain. Ah, there we go. And so I return from outside. Now that was very nice, actually. I just went out for a very quick breath, stand out the back of my house, and the view. What did you see? There was Orion has risen, and Aldebaran and Pleiades were very bright and clear. Just for a very short time, as I walked out, it started to mist over again. But it was very, very, it was, very, clear evening, I just went to say hello to the Pleiades and hello to Aldebaran, and, that happened this week. That was weird. On Jessica's show, there where I was. Maybe I'll play that. Because we were talking with various people, and she said, "Oh, right, we're talking to Aldebaran," and I said to her, "Well, what about Alcuin? What was his name? Alcuin, I think it was Alcuin. From Aldebaran, who connected with the Vril Society back in the 1930s. And Anquil, that's his name. And I shouldn't forget, you know. And so we got a very bizarre connection with this character who, yeah, I'll put it now. That'll take up some time. That'll give you some entertainment. So this is from Monday. Jessica speaking to me, Anquil speaking to me through Jessica. Right? Lots of qualification there.
Erasmus is correcting me, and she said that they're in a higher dimension. I don't know if it's above 13, but she said that they're communicating to us from the seventh dimension, which is why I'm having a hard time fully accessing their space. Not that I can't go into a higher dimension, I could, but I think they're communicating from one and then they're existing on another. It's
right,
almost
maybe
like
using
that.
Relay.
Yeah, that's where. Interesting, because I don't typically know that word, so I must have picked that up from you.
I think we're so I want to know about Anquil. I think it's Anquil. He was the person, he was the Aldebaranian who connected with the Vril Daman, in the 1940s and 30s. So can Erasmus.
I just heard him. Yeah, I just heard him talk. Do you want to talk to him?
Yeah, well, I mean, what, does he know what he did?
He said, I'm surprised that you remember me. He said we had quite a few conversations, and typically he would come to you in his sleep, in your sleep, and you would awaken writing notes, and you didn't know what all the information meant. And because you weren't confident at that time, he said, that you didn't share it with anyone, and he said you seem to be somewhat similar today. That you don't feel like you share enough of the information that you know. They have, and others have reached out to you to do more channeling. And you hold back quite a bit. And it's not that you don't have confidence. They know that you're quite capable, JP, to do all of this, but they're saying that they would like to see more.
Uh-huh. And, well,
yeah, and they say that you have not just the ability, but probably that was part of your life purpose is to be this. You're already an open channel is to convey the information, and as you're finding out through, and it's regaining confidence through the confirmation of the accuracy of the information that's come through already. And to encourage you to do more. And it's very infrequent, he said.
Can he tell us about Rudolf Seeger? Well, the one I know is Rudolf Seeger.
The information, he said, the information is not yet disclosed. He said that there is, he is not what you think he is. He was merely channeling and acting in a way temporarily, but not in originally 100% the same person his entire life. I don't know what that means, but I don't know who he is at all. On a personal level.
All right. Well, this is the man I believe is the time-traveling Nazi where we all started off.
Yeah.
Can you ask Anquil to confirm that this is the person or clarify who that person is to you?
What he's saying is that it's not a human. It's someone that stepped into his body and then morphs into his form when he's time traveling, if someone sees him, or if he's on the earth plane, but he's not human. So, but moved through that man, Seeger. Many of the Nazis were open vessels for others to step in. Nothing was as it appeared during that time period.
So who was behind them?
He says there were four different species going in and out, knowing that they had the people of Germany at that time had access to many gates through artifacts and different things that they had picked up, which opened a lot of doors, and then recognizing that these people were about to do certain things, they were much more influenced by more than one species. He's saying there was at least four significant ones. One was from Sirius. You showing me right now? One, of course, was from Aldebaran. One was another gray species. It might have been Zeta. See a reptilian and Draco as well being involved. he said that, that the information that came through that they gave humans to a system got turned around and misappropriated and misused. And then the others stepped out. And because Aldebaran was more forward about their involvement with them, it looked like they were the one behind all of what happened, but some of those souls had walk-ins. That's what he's telling me.
Thank you. And so the Second World War was more about a war between extraterrestrial races being acted out on Earth than anything to do with what we think it's about. Is that correct?
He said that's correct, and he calls you Jeremy. Yeah. He said we know each other quite well, and we've spoken at length on at least approximately 20 hours or so of conversation and questions. And that's part of the reason why you're so knowledgeable, that he has assisted in bringing in information that you've asked. But you've known him in other timelines as well.
Fascinating. And did he push the book Dig Locker towards me?
He says he pushed the book Dig Locker towards you so you can fill in the missing pieces for Sean and others.
That's exactly how I feel. That is exactly how I feel. So, very interesting.
He said you remember it all. He says, but you don't trust your memory. And you merely need to write it down and get verification. And the amazing story of the knowledge that you hold is all within you, and people are waiting to hear about it to finally get closure on this time period and what had happened.
Okay, well, that gives me an emotional reaction, maybe it's time to start writing. Yeah. So, anyway, is there anything else that Anquil has for the people of Wolf Spirit?
He said, Wolf Spirit has more than one faction. And not to say that there's a separation, he said that you're actually working well together, considering the difference in viewpoints. And there's levels of overlap, and this is a great victory for the planet to show that two separate viewpoints can actually cohabitate or work together well. He's not really revealing to me what those are. He wants you to discover that, JP.
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying that the people that are coming in, because it's creating a sense of an openness of communication. Some of it has been brought into the earth plane, but it's going to expand out more, the information that has never been here before. And it's a variety of information that is unique. And there are others that are trying to understand what's going on here, but this is kind of like, it's created like a highway. You know how you have like a network with cables and all that. This is created, expand that one wire to a highway for vehicles.
Yep. The more you work a path, the more you use a path, the wider it gets.
Yeah. And it's getting very open to the galactic field. And maybe I'm asking him, is this part of the reason why, I start off with one channel and it expanded out to so many others while we were doing it, because I'm open to this network. and others, you know, that come in here have been open to the network and are receiving their downloads and the information that they need. And also at the same time, the people in the chat room, what he's showing me is that the people in the chat room and those that are listeners are coming in a sense of a unified agreement to make earthly change by connecting into the galactics at the same time. So it's like supercharging their intent. And so this is also happening, and it's because you had chosen to be more galactic-minded rather than specific to one frame of thought. And that's actually the way of the future. And they have entrusted you. They've known you. And they said that you're a being. They call you a being of integrity and of divine guidance. So it's enabling others to actually come in, and those that are struggling over sharing their information with the world, that they can find confidence here. It's created a safe haven for many that are communicating already and are not sure how to step out into that space. You're creating a beautiful level of protection. And it's very loving and comforting for even those that just want to know what's going on. It's like the network beyond the network. So the updates and insights into what's happening galactically, or even universe in the universe or multiverse. He says more. There's more to come. Don't put any limitations on it.
The best is yet to come.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm sure we'll speak more in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whoa.
Yeah. I know we get some background sound here.
It works for me. So I'm aware that, Amy's on the show with us, so, I want to step back and give us some space. Sorry, Amy.
No, I really enjoyed that. Could you clarify who Anquil was?
Okay, so Anquil, in this book, right, so I made reference to a book called Diglocka, which was about the Project Risa, the giant project to create some super weapon in the Nazi period, and they sought help from, they sought information from everywhere, and one of them was a channeling with Anquil from the Vrildarman. The Vrildarman, I think Maria also, they broke up as well. There was a sort of breakup that went on there. I'm not entirely sure about what happened. You know, nobody really knows yet, but I'm sure we'll find out. Anyway, that's the book was the journals of one of the lead scientists who managed to escape Hitler's hitman, who came along and killed 98 out of 100 scientists. They killed them all to protect the secret of it. But these other, the two lead scientists, they escaped in the secret tunnels of the old castle. You know, one of these old castles that have the, you pull the handle and the bookcase moves. They had those in this castle, and they literally hid from the forces until it all died over and the Allies had arrived. Because the Allies were coming, and Hitler sent, General Sporenberg down to kill all the scientists, but they didn't actually expect the response that they got from Rudolf Seeger, and presumably he was just like he turned into a Nazi anti-Nazi machine, and he was killing all the killers. He was like laid out booby traps and fought with them, and then finally grabbed Helga Wilhelm, the secretary, and who he'd fallen in love with. And they jumped into the bell itself, cranked it all the way up, and poof, it disappeared. And that was the last they saw of the Glocke. And it reappears 20 years later in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. That's what the Kecksburg incident was the landing of the Glocke.
Oh, amazing. I love a good love story like that.
I tell you, this story, I read it out. I read the book out loud, I've got it on my website. But I think I might actually put it up onto YouTube. I don't know what the deal is.
I was going to say, maybe we should have the book available or, at least have the link to it. Yeah, Sean David Morton, Vanessa, if you have the link for his book, De Glocke.
Sean never got to hear all of it. I read him one night. I read him the part that was relevant, the final exciting bit. But, he's very impatient. He was, it's hard to keep his attention. So I read that part to him. But yes, I really did feel that I have the key information that joins his work up with, who's the other fellow? Fetzer and, Marzulli, all these people who have been studying this. I've got some key things that I know they don't know.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, that is also, this is Sean's book, or is this your writing?
No, De Glocke was written by it was ghostwritten, by, the name is Kelsey Bowman. And I think you can buy it on Aldebaran, Amazon. Aldebaran.com. you can get it, and, it will, it's a short book. It took, how long did it take? About 14 hours to read or something. And, that's out loud. And, it's an unusual book, You don't get it very often. But it talks about, like, the family feeling that they had as a small team, a little team of four.
Developing the Glocke. Vanessa said that it's, the De Glocke book is here on World Spirit Radio, so it's in the archives, so you read it out loud, right? It's, it's an audio book.
Yes, indeed. And Ray says, where did the De Glocke go? It went to Pennsylvania. It went to Kecksburg. So if you take into account...
So the time travel machine is in Pittsburgh?
Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Sorry, not Pittsburgh. these names... which is interesting because...
Isn't that where it's close to the Philadelphia Project?
Perhaps. Perhaps I'm not sure of the geography. I know that the name Kecksburg is not an English name. It's not that's a sounding a German name, Berg, right? And then there's Keck. Do you know who Keck is?
Keck is the frog, which is the El Grook,
indeed.
Yeah, the El Grook species that are messing around with interdimensions. All right, so that explains why I was seeing it, because you said it's in Pennsylvania, but I was seeing it interdimensional. So even if it's here physically, it's still moving through time. I just saw that.
So it's a strange little thing. And also, I believe that the image of De Glocke is kind of somehow in our subconscious mind, because it was a secret, but is collective consciously there. That's where the shape of the Dalek comes from. Doctor Who's monster Dalek. It looks like the bell. A little one. And it's got machine gun turrets on it. And it is a Nazi. The Daleks are Nazis. They have no feelings apart from hatred. I want to step back and stop talking about the Second World War again. Sound like an old bloke.
We could actually do this again. Yeah. If people are open to hearing from Erasmus, we'll do another show. Just give us some feedback.
Yeah.
Also, Tim Kuda says, I know Sands of Time series is listed on Amazon, and it's a good read. So that was Sean's book. Is that correct?
Sean's book is called The Sands of Time, and also the Isomer Protocol. Sean David Morton, buy his book and support him.
Yeah, I'm saying that's why. Let's support him. He's from the network, and we want to. I know he's having a hard time.
So, there we go. So what I've decided to do is grab my copy of the book. Die Glocke. Die Glocke. Die Glocke. And read the chapter. Chapter 13. Seven Celestial Beauties. 20-some years ago, Mrs. Goethe was quite the dish. Every bit as beautiful as Helga Wilhelm. It's funny how time can take things so beautiful and fade them away. Seeger saw a picture of the young Anna Goethe while staying at Helga's parents' villa. That night, when he was shown the vision of aliens and racial war, she told the colonel of the Vril history and their ultimate goal. Shortly after World War I, occult groups were popping up all over Europe. The Vril Society was no exception. In the early 1900s, a gathering occurred in a small coffee shop in Vienna. Seven young, beautiful women were brought together, and the union of these souls could be described as a coven. 500 years ago, it would have been called witchcraft, but now they call it channeling. At first, none of these beauties could communicate nothing, but together, something special happened. That night after coffee, the seven women retreated to a cottage deep in the Vienna forest. Glowing in candlelight, the women sat holding hands, encircling an ancient symbol, chanting ancient words. Their minds opened to a universal source of knowledge, and the answers came flooding in. Maria Orsic was a famous medium who became the leader of the Vril Society. She was born in Vienna, Austria. Her father was a Croatian immigrant from Zagreb. Her mother was from Vienna. Maria soon followed the German national movement, which was active at this time because their main goal was to annex Austria with the German Reich. In 1919, Maria moved to München, Germany, to live with her boyfriend, who later became her fiancé. It is unknown whether they married or not, because they both mysteriously disappeared in 1945. All of them were young ladies. All were very beautiful, with very long hair. Maria was blonde and Anna was brown-haired. They had loose ponytails, a very uncommon hairstyle at that time. They believed that their long hair acted as cosmic antennae to receive alien communication from beyond. In public, they hardly ever exhibited the hair horsetail style, but other methods of identification of realm members were used. They wore a disc which represented the two mediums, Maria Orsic and Anna Goethe. A year after the seven met, in December of 1920, a small group of persons from the Thule, the Vril, and the Men of the Black Stone rented a small forester's lodge in the vicinity of Berchtesgaden, Germany. Maria and Anna claimed to have received medium transmissions in a secret German Templar script, a language unknown to Maria. The message contained technical data for the construction of a flying machine. The seven women met regularly, enchanting the spirits to release their secrets, the secret far larger than any of them knew. These telepathic messages had their origin in Aldebaran, a solar system 68 light years away in the constellation Taurus. They began to document these sessions, and before the girls knew it, they had two piles of papers, one with the Templar script and the other with the legible writing. Maria suspected the second pile would be written in an ancient Eastern language, and therefore she could be aided by the Pan-Babylonists, a circle close to the Thule Society. It turned out that the apparently mysterious language was actually ancient Sumerian, and hence the language of the ancient Babylonian culture founders. Anna helped translate the language and decipher the strange mental images of a circular flight machine. The concept of this technology matured in this time and the following years. Due to financing difficulties, it took 3 years until the flying machine project started taking place. By 1922, parts for the machine began arriving independently from various industrial sources, paid in full by the Thule and the Vril. No success ever achieved, but the images and information still trickled in for 20 years until whispers fell on Hitler's ears. On his first encounter with Maria and Anna, Hitler witnessed a weird voice identifying itself as Anquil from an alien race known as the Sumi. The Sumi were dwellers of a distant world which orbits the star Aldebaran in the constellation called Taurus, the Bull. According to the voice, the Sumi were a humanoid race who had briefly colonized Earth 500 million years ago. The rulers of ancient Larsa, Shurupak and Nippur in Iraq had been built by them. Those of them who survived the great flood of Ut-Napishtim, the deluge of Noah's Ark, had become the ancestors of the Aryan race. Hitler broke out into a rant while Maria was still in a trance, demanding proof. She scribbled several lines of queer-looking marks. Those marks turned out to be ancient Sumerian characters, the language of the founders of the oldest Babylonian culture. In December 1943, Maria attended, together with Anna, a meeting held by the Vril at the seaside resort of Kolberg. The main purpose of the meeting was to deal with the Aldebaran project. The Vril mediums had received precise information regarding the habitable planets around the sun Aldebaran, and the way they were willing to plan a trip there. This project was discussed again on the 22nd of January 1944 in a meeting between Hitler, Kammler, and General Sporenberg. It was decided that seven celestial beauties better known as the Vril Seven, would be sent through a dimensional channel independent of the speed of light to Aldebaran. According to Sporenberg, the first test flight in the dimension channel took place in late 1944. The test flight almost ended in disaster because after the flight, the bell looked as if it had been flying for 100 years. Its outer skin looked aged and had suffered damages in several places. Maria Orsic and Anna Gotha, along with the remaining celestial beauties, mysteriously disappeared in 1945. On the 11th of March, 1945, an internal document of the Vril Society was sent to all its members. In a letter written by Maria Orsic, the letter ends, "Niemand bleibt hier." This translates to, "No one is staying here." This was the last announcement from the Vril Society, and since then, no one heard again from Maria or the rest of the women. It is speculated the seven celestial beauties escaped to Aldebaran. So, let's put a bit of music on. Maybe I'll find another piece. I was looking for the piece where he's actually talking with Anquil himself. So, have a bit of this. Let's mellow out. All right, so that stopped. That stopped early. Okay. Well, look, let's go into this piece, which is obviously the darker side of this is that there's crazy mad German scientists running around doing crazy mad journal things. And the one that we particularly are focusing on this week is Warner Eckert. I'm pretty sure. Warner Eckert. I'll correct it if it's wrong. He's the guy that's messing around with all sorts of things. The weird spooky science, I think they called it, or they have other words for it. WSAFM. weird science and freaking magic. Right, yeah, so, okay, so, there we go. Dr. Warner Eckert can't be missed. He's screaming orders from his perch, controlling his lab like a conductor with an orchestra. In his thick German accent, so Seeger walks into his lab, right? Seeger, I heard you were coming to steal my secrets. Not to steal, Warner, you just borrow. Seeger, soon you'll witness the power of the Vril. I'm about to test my new Serum 525 formula. Eckert stops and turns, shouting out, bring in the test subjects! Four assistants run back to the farthest recesses of the cavern. They start hauling out plants, rabbits, chickens, and then the non-animate objects follow. Things like wood, plastic, and metals. The assistants organize these objects around the circumference of the test rig. Surik looks at Seeger. They're the two scientists from the Royal Project. What's he going to do? Effects test, Surik. That's right, Seeger. You're not as dumb as you look, shouts Eckert. I'm going to expose a particle amount of my new red mercury to an explosive force. In theory, this should release an array of elemental particles and their associated radiations. We need to see the effects on living tissue. The lead case will filter out all unwanted frequencies and radiations. We may encounter unknown forms of radiation, so we must be careful, Seeger. Don't want to kill us or mutate us into zombies. Surik responds to the colonel in a whisper. You're right, sir. He's nuts. Varner turns, and with the look of a madman and with a huge grin on his face. Okay, boys, let's let the smoke out of this thing. Warner hops and jumps across decks, over platforms and more railings. Unnatural, if you could ask Zurich. Seeger and Zurich try to keep up, eventually arriving at the same observation deck as Warner. Warner stands in front of a master control panel that's about four stories above the test rig. Clear! He shouts. A loud buzzer emanates, pulsating every second. 10, 9, 8, 7, he throws the switch. Hide! He yells. Then he quickly ducks and hides himself behind the control console. Surik once again looks at Colonel Seeger, the young man's eyes wide open. What? Just then, the air is filled with a deafening low-frequency ping, followed by a greenish glow that illuminated every crevice of the cavern. Seeger and Surik raise their arms and bow their heads so to shield from the strange light. It only lasts for a second, and then an eerie silence overtakes the room. Fauna Eckert stands. What happened? Anyone see it? Come on, guys. Once again, like a weird, wired monkey, the doctor is on the test platform in a flash. The colonel and his mate follow the stairs down. They arrive to an indescribable scene. My God, Fauna, what the hell did you do? Asked Seeger.
I have unleashed the power of the Vril.
Zurik turns and runs to the side and vomits into the gutter. Gagging and wiping his mouth off, he stands forcing himself to return to the repulsive sight. Most items were turned into a black goo. The sickest visualization was the live test animals. They were turned inside out. Parts of them blended into the deck. Other parts turned into that jello type black goo. The worst thing for Surik was the live ones. For some of these creatures, death did not come. They screamed in agony. The pieces of them that could fluttered wildly. The air filled with a sickening smell and taste. That of sulfur or rot. It did make you want to gag.
Beautiful, don't you think, Seeger?
Warner excitedly states.
What caused this, Warner?
The radiation of the Vril. I released all its energy under compression. Seeger, come here, I'll show you something.
Seeger follows him around the pile of goo and guts to the entrance of the lead test chamber. The doctor releases the door hatch, swinging the door wide open.
Look, Seeger.
Warner points into the center of the inner chamber. Seeger focuses to a small test stand. He can see a pebble-sized purplish-tinged puddle of liquid metal.
Is that red mercury? Yes, Colonel, Zavril energy.
Why is it still there? Why wasn't it destroyed in the blast?
Under compression, the unstable red mercury isotope is energized into pure radiation. The force of the explosion converted into energy, not heat or other byproducts of the other... The force of the explosion converted into energy, not heat or other, by process of combustion. See, Seeger, when you squeeze red mercury, you release a type of radiation based on the magnitude of the compression force applied.
Dr. Eckert enters the chamber.
Look, Seeger. See, I played a high-voltage meter to see if a byproduct of the released radiation was an electric field. That's minute event. Pin the meter to 50 million volts.
My God, Warner, you've done it, you crazy bastard. Warner screams back,
I'm not crazy.
Seeger, glaring back at him and presenting his SS war face.
Yeah, Warner, you are. Now stop your nutty bullshit. I want all the information now. Get your little Jew slaves to get it for me. Don't comply. I'll have Sporenberg deal with you.
Oh, no need, Colonel.
I want the production process details, how this stuff is made.
To make a long story short, mercury is mixed with several other based elements to unstable in electron configuration. We put them all into a single chamber and run as much current through it as we can muster. All substance combine in this plasma state. It takes 7 days to cool, but when it returns to room temperature, voila, you have red mercury, an unstable radioactive isotope of mercury.
How much of this stuff do you have, Warner?
Only several grams. How much do you need?
3 tons.
That's a lot of real. Can I help?
General Kamler will inform me of your role.
Kamler? And you call me crazy?
I was just working for him when this happened. Werner drags his hand over the top of his scarred scalp.
I'll stick with my master.
Who's that, Warner?
Marshal Bormann.
He's everyone's master, Warner.
I know. He oversees Section Z. The real weapon must be built. The outcome of the war depends on it. You must build the bell to deliver the weapon with blitzkrieg speed to guarantee the element of surprise.
We can win this war, Seeger. Rule the world!
Laughing madly, the eerie figure says nothing else, just turns and leaves. He disappears into the dark recesses of the cavern. Zurich, let's get what we need and get the hell out of here.
Yes, sir.
He runs over to the 3 technicians to acquire the required data. About 1 hour passes as Seeger and Zurich make sure they have everything they need. Good work, Zurich. They hastily leave the weirdness of the lab and feel much safer in the lighted corridor. So, that's the section...
That's the mad crazy... That's Dr. Strangelove, that guy...
Warner Eckert, he's the guy who, well, obviously he's discovering, he's making various blends, and this one particular one is Serum 525, you know, it's like formula number 525, so he's obviously been trying lots and lots of formulas, you know, once there was a Serum 1. Okay. So, now, where's the chat room? There we go. Muskus and time. Yeah. 3 tons of rig mercury, no problem. Yeah. Well, that's right. This is Operation Paperclip. Yeah, it's not like this story stopped. This is the beginning of the story. Yeah, so it's an ongoing story, I believe, because these things haven't been stopped. This might be part of what's going on now. Who knows? Who knows if dismantling the deep state is going to dismantle the Nazi contingent, the Fourth Reich contingent. So, if anybody would like to call in and discuss any of that, I'm going to play another tune. The reason is I'm trying to find the bit where he actually speaks to Anquil. So, that last section happened afterwards, obviously, because they knew what the Vril was. So, let's see.
Let's have this one. Oh, no, I keep playing. Oh, I play it a lot. I still love it. Here's Winds of Change for those Scorpions. Have a nice little journey with this. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Ever Beyond, the rather sleepy version. So, I found it. It was right at the beginning. It's chapter 2. And chapter 1 is only a little skinny one. So, shall we? Let's use the old time machine, the old-fashioned time machine, not the the modern one. Here we go. The Vril Society. You may ask yourself where things originate. And right now, Colonel Seeger was glad Kamala did not ask where Diglocker's origins stem from. As a matter of fact, in order to get to the next piece of the puzzle of unknown technologies, he had to meet with Madame Gota. She was a well-known psychic performing channeling sessions for the Vril Society. The Vril Society was a dark, ominous group closely related to the occult researchers of the SS. Hitler was trying to get his hands on a weapon that would guarantee world domination. The Führer's experience with the capturing of the Spear of Destiny when he took Austria increased his power tenfold. With this, his lust for the occult spiraled out of control. The Reich's resources and focus have kept them 15 years ahead of the Allies in technology, but yet the tide of the war was turning against Germany. The Reich, desperate, turned to the Vril Society for more answers. The Vril Society was working with mediums channeling of extraterrestrial beings from another galaxy. To most of the SS hierarchy, this was all rubbish. But yet, a large percentage of the information brought back from these channeling sessions did bear fruit. In particular to the Bell. The spinning electrical field seen by Mrs. Gota in a communication with an extraterrestrial called Anquil. To Seeger, it didn't matter where it came from. All he wanted to do was get this war over with and go home to his wife and kids. So if Winnie the Pooh told him to build this thing, he would have. It was 9 p.m. and Seeger was already running late. His broad, lean frame scurried through the dark, drizzly air and down the cobblestone walkway. He only had a few blocks to go. His destination lies in the heart of the German high class, the Wilhelm Villa. The Wilhelms were one of the richest families in Germany and the biggest financial supporter of the Nazi Party. They were firm believers in the Vril teachings and practices. It was this family that managed to convince the SS high commander to use the Vril mediums to gain advances in technology. Colonel Seeger finds himself standing in front of two white wood doors. He extends his right arm and knocks 3 times with a brass ring knocker. Takes a step back, adjusts his uniform to appear his best. A beautiful blonde, blue-eyed, master race woman gracefully opens the doors. "Hello, Colonel Seeger. Please come in." Her hand motions in a welcoming manner. Seeger walks into a large open area. He's surrounded by marble floors, dark oak wood trim, fantastic artworks hung throughout. 2 large granite statues guard the entrance to the main gathering room. Just beyond the 2 renditions of Apollo and Zeus, Rodan and Andronicus, just beyond the 2 renditions of Apollo and Zeus, Seeger can see 3 of his top research scientists enjoying each other's conversation, a few glasses of schnapps. He makes his way across the room to his colleagues. "Ah, you chaps in for a psychic ride or what?" "Ah, yes, sir," a stubby little fellow replies. "Alfred, is this your first time witnessing one of these sessions?"
"Not really, sir. My first wife was a psycho and gave me enough sessions to last a lifetime."
"I said psychic, not psycho."
"Yeah, I know."
Laughter breaks out amongst the trio.
So much so, it's amazing that joke translated, so much so that the crowd's attention is drawn to them. This is serious business to the Wilhelms and SS members. Disciplinary looks are cast from the most serious of the group gathering in the large dining room. Alfred looking at the others in his group. Huh, why so serious? Again, laughter breaks out. Seeger and his three subordinates are not the type of men to give in to some off looks from upper German class members. Upper class German members. They themselves come from the highest of German lineage. Their education's next to none. They were essential to the success of these advanced projects. It could not be done without them. An elderly lady walks in and takes center stage. Hello, everyone, she says with a loud, authoritative voice. Can I have your attention, please? I am Mrs. Anna Goethe, your medium for tonight's session. Please take a seat, everyone. I will need you all to remain silent throughout the channeling session. If you cannot do this, I must ask you to leave now. She waits a moment before continuing. Okay, then let's begin. Will someone please dim the light? The room fades to a comfortable, dimly lit sitting. The glow and heat from the room's fireplace provides further relaxation. She takes a seat in the center of the room's area rug. Several minutes pass by in total silence before she speaks.
Anquil! Anquil!
She calls out in a long, drawn-out voice. Silence fills the great room one more.
Through space and time, I call to you, my source of knowledge. Anquil, answer me.
Her head falls to her chest. She appears to be in distress, struggling to get something out. Several deep breaths are taken before the room is filled with an unworldly voice.
Yes, it's me.
Anquil, is that you?
Yes. Have you made progress on the development of the gravitational propulsion system?
We have. Still, we have not been able to obtain stable vehicle control or reliable power sources.
I need to commune with a research scientist.
Mrs. Goethe once again goes completely silent. Her head bobs, weaving side to side, eyes closed. Suddenly,
Colonel Seeger! Seeger, please step forward and approach me.
Stunned and shocked, Seeger and his crew turn and gaze at one another, not knowing what to do. Well, here goes nothing, boys, Seeger leans in and whispers, leans in. He makes his way through the crowd that's gathered around the withered old lady.
Yes, Mrs. Goethe, it's me, Colonel Seeger.
Anquil, Colonel Seeger is here. He's the chief design engineer on the Bell project.
Mrs. Goethe goes between states. At times she speaks normally, as an old lady would. Then at other times a voice that could not have been hers bellows out.
Seeger, is that you?
A disembodied voice calls out.
Anquil, is that you?
Seeger replies in a shy and nervous tone.
Yes. What is the nature of the issues with the drive system?
We cannot achieve enough voltage potential for large-sized crafts and control has been unstable.
What are you using for creation of the rotating electric field?
A Van de Graaff generator supplies the voltage potential to solid rotating disks.
Oh, no, no, no. You must use Vril energy to get the desired voltage potential. No disks. Use cylinders filled with Vril.
I don't understand. What is Vril energy?
An unstable radioisotope of a superfluid. You must find the right mixture of what exists in your world, thus the Vril is different in all worlds.
So Vril is a liquid?
A liquid metal. In your world, mercury would be the best example.
Are you saying mercury is what we should use?
No. Make a superfluid from whatever elements can give you the liquid properties of mercury and the conductive properties of a metal. Make this superfluid unstable in its electron configuration. Under the compression of high-speed rotation, the Vril energy will be released. The energy put into the system will be amplified by infinite amounts. Then you will achieve the potentials to lift any mass. Control will stabilize with field magnitude, and you will have a viable propulsion system. What's superfluid? How do we... Suddenly, Mrs. Goethe began to jerk and shake.
Ankle, don't go, don't go.
One last ghostly voice calls out.
Red Mercury.
Red Mercury? Mrs. Goethe collapses off her chair into a pile on the masterwood floor. Seeger moves in to aid her. She looks up into his blue eyes.
Did you get what you needed?
I'm not sure, ma'am. It will come to you, Colonel. Please escort me into the next room and tell me what transpired. Mean you can't remember what took place, Mrs. Goethe?
I very seldom do, Colonel.
Seeger gently helps the old lady to her feet. They exit the great dining room and enter a small library. Seeger sits Mrs. Goethe down next to a warm fireplace. He finds the nearest chair and sits next to her. As Seeger talks with her, he begins to be overcome with calmness. It reminded him of the feeling he used to get when he would have long conversations with his mother while vacationing in the Owl Mountains as a child. The time flew by, and as the conversation came to a close, Seeger began to believe that this old woman did have some kind of extrasensory ability. So, yes, indeed, that was the channeling session, with Anquil, his transmission right at the beginning of the time. Now, there's no date that's actually given to this meeting. Let me just check. He might have said something. It was 9 p.m. in the evening. Didn't know where. It doesn't say where exactly when in time that happened. Now I've got one other piece, which was a very fascinating little moment with the Vrildarman later on in the book, and I'll grab that too. That's like a whole tiny little chapter all by itself. Right. What's going on? So. I can't remember. Can't see what they're. So you're talking about French in the chat room. Where are you? Right. Okay. I can now scroll back in the chat room. All right. So Sturgeon saying, Iron Sky. Yeah, I believe there's a lot of truth in Iron Sky. There's a follow-up of now which one was it? Nazis in Antarctica or Nazis under the Atlantic? There's a dome under the Atlantic. There's a cavity under the Atlantic, and I believe there's an old Nazi base down there. Yeah, for instance, Star's saying there, you know, different names. If you look at the TV show Fringe, you'll see a perfect example of it. the doctor who's in Fringe is the child of a paperclip scientist, because he said our name was originally Bischoff, but it was anglicized to Bishop. So it had this kind of nice sort of English sounding bishop name, but they were actually really Bischoff. So, come on. I can't believe when I want something to work, it just either doesn't do it. It's got a delay and it does it loads up. I'm sure you will. Yeah, reading does make me sleepy. All right.
Oh, the joke, right, okay, there we go, yes. Imagine if they called out for Metis instead of Anquil, that would have been different.
Hello, my flower.
Yeah, that would have been funny. But yes, okay, so I can't, there we go. Ignore us, Jake, you're right. Okay. So, anybody want to call in for a quick chat? I think about 10, 12 minutes left. You can call in. All right, hang on. I'm getting something. Some message coming in from Ra. All right, so I got, let's have one more. I'm going to see if I can find this chapter. And I'd forgotten about this chapter completely. I must have read it in the thing, in the original one. But, yeah, it's good to read a book again. here we are. Is it? No. New things that are called. Seven Celestial Beauties. Yes. No, that's the one I read. I read that one earlier. Maybe correctly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Spar and Bone. All right. Okay. So, no, it's not that. I'm going to have to find it. There's this one. Oh, hang on. There's someone calling. Let's see. Hey, Geezer.
Hi.
How you doing? Hey.
Very well.
Did you hear any of that?
Tonight. I'm sorry.
Did you hear any of this?
Yes, I've been listening to it all the time. Yes, it's your favourite subject, and I love it. It's great. It's so fascinating about where it landed in Kecksburg.
Mm.
And I did hear there was an eyewitness to that. It was a farmer, apparently, where it landed. He was the first one on the scene there. And when he got on the scene, he turned around, he was the first one there. He was obviously told to shut up and say nothing.
Hmm.
But there is something on a video somewhere. I remember listening to it a few years ago. And he said he couldn't see what the shape was, basically, because as it came down, just destroyed everything and made sort of like landing, but he said the back of it looked like an acorn. That's the only way he could explain it to this fellow he was talking to.
Yeah. I got the feeling that a lot of it kind of, probably the edges kind of liquefied a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was buried in, obviously, with so much dirt and soil. But and he said it had strange writings on the back. You can only see the back of it. And he was told not to talk about it, and he never spoke about it for 30-odd years, and then he came out with it. So it is, it's a great subject. It really is.
Mm. So the place where this thing reinserts itself into... I've always been... Yeah, one of the things is like, how can something disappear in Germany in 1945, reappear on Earth? It was really lucky.
Yeah.
Because, it could have reappeared anywhere in the orbit of Earth. Could you think about it?
Exactly. I mean, like, just jump in, crank it up, and go.
Mm.
Where are we going? We don't know. You know? It could have landed anyway. It could have landed in the middle of New York.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
But It's always fascinating how these crafts always land in certain places. It's always isolated places.
Hmm. And that might be, there might be a reason. You know, it might be because of the consciousness, you know, lack of density of consciousness.
Yeah. I believe there's something like that, because it just never happens anywhere in a populated area. You know, always somewhere, like, you know, it's like a local farmer or somewhere in the desert, people who don't communicate with a radio or television or whatever they had then days at a time. It was, anyway, this fellow, it was quite fascinating talking about it. He said, I never spoke about it for 20 odd years. And, he said, they took it away on the back of a big truck after they dug it out. It took them all night, to dig it out. And by the morning, gone. And that even the mark where it landed in, sort of thing, they filled it in, sort of thing, and they explained that there was some sort of meteorite come down or something like that to cover it up, obviously. So it was quite interesting. I can't remember the fella's name now, but going back a while.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
It was the only eyewitness there.
Yeah, there were very few eyewitnesses to it. But what's interesting is that, according to Sean, is that when Diglocker reappeared, there was a tunnel through time-space formed, and other scientists started falling out, and other people appeared at this same place, like German soldiers. Very strange.
What? Sort of popping out of dimensions, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, they must have come through the same time tunnel that was torn by the by Diglocker. You know, it didn't really travel through time space deliberately. They just cranked it up and sold, you know, and it dropped through one layer of. Imagine they say that time is like sheets of wet newspaper. So if you drop a ball bearing through sheets of wet newspaper, it will just keep dropping through, you know?
So basically, it just took off, landed, and it got out 20 years later.
That's right. And 20 years and, what is it, 2,000 miles, 3,000 miles, 4,000 miles away? But I'm sure that's, you know, if you take up the rotation of the Earth, spin of the planet, and everything like that, you know, it will get there. It's probably, that's how it goes. So, yeah. That's how the doctor does it.
It's your favourite subject. I know you've been doing it for a long time. You know, obviously, it's all in the archives then. So, I would say a lot of people go and listen to it because it is very, very interesting.
Well, you know, what was the interesting thing is, like, several years ago, it started with Jessica. She said, I keep seeing this guy who's popping up from the New York subway, you know, from underneath New York, like the sewer system or something like that.
Okay.
And he looks German. And I said, oh, maybe he's time traveler. And so we sort of created the time traveling Nazi meme. Mm. And then this book fell into my hands. Cause I think what happened is I was doing some research. I can't remember where it started, but I just Googled some various terms, and this book comes up, and it's all about Diglocker, and it's got a lot of answers in it. So I actually bought it rather than just read it online. I bought the whole thing. But it's a fascinating book, and I'll make it available maybe under the open source folder in the current folder.
So we don't actually know who the writer was, because you said it was a ghost writer.
He calls himself Kelsey Tyrone Bowman. Might be Martin Bowman.
So, that's a name he's getting in. Bye.
Yeah, so, but you can't, you Google Kelsey Bowman and all you get is
nothing.
Exactly, yeah. So it's fascinating who actually wrote, who the person is.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So he's actually saying
what's going on.
we're out of time, amazingly.
That's all right.
I spent most of the show asleep.
Just started to help me out a little bit.
But I hope you've enjoyed the Jack and Nora this evening.
I have, very much so. Thank you, JP.
You're very welcome. Jack and Nori, for everybody who doesn't know what we're talking about. What's that?
Jack and Nori, a lot of Americans don't know that.
No, but it was a TV show for the kids in the 60s, and it was tell a story, Jack and Nori. So, this was Ever Beyond.
Good night, thank you, everybody. JP. Good night.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.